Success Mat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. My name is Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat. On the show today, we've got a great one. We're going to do a lot around the NFL draft that's coming up. And hey, there's a lot of Arizona angles around this draft. DJ Foster joins us in studio at around 10:20. He will talk to us about the ride he's been on. He caught up with Brad about a month ago before the combine. So we'll talk to him about his combine experience. And also we'll reminisce a little bit because I've been covering DJ really since he broke out as a high school player. That's kind of how I got my start in this industry. So I've kind of been able to follow his path as I've made my path through this crazy business. And then Scooby Wright from U of A will do the ASU angle and the U of A angle today. Scooby Wright, the former All-American linebacker from down in Tucson at the University of Arizona, he'll join us on the show as well to talk about his draft preparations as well. Plus, it's really, really good stuff. When he went back to Tucson for his pro day, he played a prank on a former teammate, and it is a pretty classic story. He'll have that for us coming up as well. But let's get off and running. First, we'll get it out the way quickly. Devin Booker, 1 point shy of a career high yet again last night, 34 points in Atlanta as the Suns lose their seventh straight. But man, it's not getting old watching Devin Booker do his thing. You have to be thrilled. And if Suns fans out there are still frustrated about what's gone on in the past and everything like that, it's time to move on, because everything that I've seen about the Suns, if as it pertains to Devin Booker and as it pertains to Earl Watson, you have to be at least pleased with the attempt to kind of push things forward and start a new era. I know Earl Watson's talking a lot about building a program and building a new identity, and guess what? I believe him, because his actions are being backed up by the way this team is playing. Yeah, they're not winning games, and the last two, they just so happen to be going up against teams that are fighting for playoff positioning in the Jazz and the Hawks. So there were moments of those games last night and then on Sunday that weren't very pretty. But you can't help but notice how well this team is listening to Earl Watson and embracing his antics and what he's all about. And Devin Booker, man, if you're not excited about this guy, it's time to start tuning in to watch him the last couple weeks of the season, because it has been a joy to watch what he's been able to accomplish.
And by the way, Jared, not to
interrupt. Hi, Eric.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to just
jump
in.
No, you're good. I was going to switch gears, but if you have
Our friend Paul Coro had a cute little stat last night. Devin Booker has 15 20-plus point games this season.
Now,
not bad.
On that, it's not a fluke when you score 15, 20-point games in a season as a 19-year-old, and it's also not a fluke when you've scored a handful of 30-point games. This is the NBA we're talking about here. It's not easy to score 20-point and 30-point games in high school and college.
Right.
You have to be a star to be able to do that. You have to be special scoring the basketball, and he's doing it at the NBA level at 19 years of age. Granted, he's playing on a bad team. He's getting a lot of touches and a lot of shots, but you still have to make the shots, and they're keying in on him too. I went to that game on Sunday against Utah with my dad, and we were talking about, because he got off to a slow start in that game. It wasn't the best game he's had in this recent stretch, but it was because Utah was keying in on him. They were trying to force him, anyone else on the floor, to beat him, and that ended up being Tyson Chandler who went off.
The most amazing thing about all this is, think back to when you were 19.
I mean, totally different place.
Honestly, that's the thing.
Really,
like,
funny you mentioned that.
I was talking with my mom, and my mom's like, "Yeah, we just forget Devin Booker's 19." And I was thinking to myself, "Okay, 19. Yeah, I could not do what he's doing. I mean, I couldn't do it at any point in my life. But to put it in perspective, when you think back to the way you were when you were 19, compared to what he's doing at the current age of 19, yeah, it makes you feel not so great about yourself.
But totally not good about myself. Yeah. No question about it.
You were down at U of A studying hard in the library.
I was dealing with my first kind of slap in the face in college of how I need to be able to study, because I had failed my first college test at the age of 19. And I was trying to dig myself out of that hole, because real life slaps you in the face once you get to college. Can't imagine how it slaps you in the face even harder when you're in the NBA, when you're playing a grown man's game with the spotlight on you 24/7. I mean, I would have keeled over. You kidding me? Have to love what Devin Booker's doing. And also the Warriors lost to the Timberwolves last night. Watch out for the Timberwolves. If you're a Suns fan and you're excited about Devin Booker, if you're not going nuts in Minnesota right now with what the Timberwolves are looking like and what looking like they could be, they could have something pretty special going on. So that's my NBA rant for today's show. Let's get into baseball. We're going to talk a lot of baseball and football. We'll talk baseball right now as the Diamondbacks get their first win of 2016 last night. They knock off the Colorado Rockies 11-6, and it got off to a great start and had a rough middle. And unlike the opening night, it had a great finish. Opening night, Zach Greinke comes out, pitches two fantastic lights-out innings, then gets rocked in the third and fourth innings to give up 7 runs. Trevor Story hits 2 home runs, and then the Diamondbacks aren't able to salvage a victory. But last night, it was a different story. Shelby Miller, it started the same. Shelby Miller comes out, looks fantastic in 3 innings. He looks incredible, and it's been making everyone pretty excited because his stuff was nasty. Then in the fourth inning, surrenders 3 home runs, and it's the same story with Trevor Story. Didn't even mean to do that just now, Eric. It's funny how that stuff pops out. Trevor Story hits another home run. So does Nick Hundley. There's 2 home runs, 3 home runs total in the game for the Rockies, and it's looking scary again. And what I love about you, Eric, is when stuff like this starts to happen, you whip out your phone. I do the same, and you start seeing people going nuts. And it's hilarious. It really is. People just start writing the team off after 2 games. Yes, Chip Hale, there was way too much hype going into that game, and there should have been. And thank you for backing off of those comments, and thank you for your son for giving you a hard time, because I did not agree with those. But I'm a huge fan of you, Chip Hale. I know I was hard on you yesterday, but I love what you're about, and I love what you do. But it's not about going nuts here, and I agree with you, Chip. It's now 2 out of 162, and you got a win out of one of them. Let's put this into perspective, Eric. Chase Field is not an easy place to pitch. And if you make mistakes, especially up in the zone, balls that may get caught up in the thick air at AT&T Park in San Francisco might end up being routine fly balls or warning track distance balls, but these are going to get out of the ballpark. Shea Hillenbrand. Remember Shea Hillenbrand? Shea Hillenbrand was a less than 10 home run a year guy, maybe a little over 10 home runs. And what did he hit, like 25 to 30 in his first year at Chase Field?
He had quite a few.
Yeah. Say hello to my little friend. Remember
right,
that?
Exactly. Exactly.
So Shelby Miller and Zach Greinke got their first home taste of Chase Field. And they're going to have to make adjustments. And the whole season is about adjustments. So these people that are saying, this just validates how horrible the Shelby Miller trade was. This guy's a joke. Zach Greinke, he's not worth $200 million. How could you do this? Please, pump the brakes, man. Give me a break.
As our good friend Bill Goodykoons once said on this program, Twitter is like sitting in the world's largest sports bar. Everyone has an opinion. Everything's unfiltered. There's no censorship. You can say whatever you want. And if, like you said, I was scrolling through my phone, as I like to do during games, and people are saying the Diamondbacks just set a franchise record for most hits in their first 2 games. And I'm seeing things like this could be their best offensive team ever. 2 of 162.
Yep.
We're not even to the middle of April. Let's just let the season play out.
As Dr. Evil once said, bring it down a notch. Bring it down a notch, Scott.
Now, if Zach Greinke has 1, 2, 3 consecutive bad starts,
absolutely,
or even 2 consecutive bad starts. Yeah. I mean, it's becoming a trend, not an anomaly. Let's just wait.
And hey, guess what? He's playing the Cubs this weekend. Are you watching what the Cubs are doing to the Angels after 2 games?
Yeah, that's not going to be an easy series for the Diamondbacks.
So, but no, it's not going to be easy at all, and it should be electric. It should be a lot of fun, and I highly encourage everyone who's a Diamondback fan, a Cub fan, baseball fan in general to get down there because it should be some fun baseball. With that being said, if Zach Greinke gets lit up again and Shelby Miller gets lit up again, I don't know if Shelby Miller will make a start this weekend. He might. I don't know. I have to look into that. But Zach Greinke for sure will be making a start. And if he gets lit up again and people go nuts, still tone it down because he's playing the Cubs, who are killing everyone and are going to be killing everyone this year. It's an exciting time in Chicago because they have a heck of a baseball team. And they're really making the Angels hurt right now. I was talking with some people outside before the show started, a Cubs fan in the office, And I have a, and I'm a Cubs fan myself. Before the Diamondbacks existed here in Arizona, I was a Cubs fan. It's been a difficult run my whole life, but they were crushing the Angels. I have three Angels on my fantasy team, and I'm like, yeah, go Cubs. And then I look at my fantasy squad, I'm like, geez, tone it back. Anyways, coming up next, DJ Foster. We're going to sit on the couches, going to talk football, draft, reminisce about his time at ASU and even Saguaro. Love catching up with DJ Foster. He's awesome. We'll catch up with him coming up next. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. The NFL draft will be here before we know it, just at the end of April, so we're getting you ready for it. A lot of local prospects right in the thick of all this stuff, and right now we're very, very happy to be joined in studio by DJ Foster, joining us again during this whole process on Brad Sesmat's Football AZ. And DJ, since we've seen you, you've competed in the combine, mm-hmm. you've gone through the whole process, you've done a couple, you've done your pro day, you've visited some teams. Just, I want to know about some stories and some things that you've experienced over the course of the last few weeks that have just really been lifelong memories that you'll take away.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. I mean, the process has gone by so fast. I mean, those are things that you look at when you're a little kid. I mean, going to the combine, seeing it on TV every year, having my pro day and just doing these private workouts. I mean, it's been gone by so fast, and it's unbelievable. And it's just been a crazy adventure. I mean, it's gone by, and every time I go out there, I mean, I just think about this is here. I mean, this next journey's here, and just to be able to just live in the moment. And I've enjoyed every second of it, yeah.
DJ, it's fun to reminisce with you, because following you through high school, through your time at ASU, it's been fun to watch, but it also hasn't been that much time. Yeah. It's gone by really fast. Do you kind of take a step back to think about, wow, I'm here right now, I'm pursuing my dream, it is right here in my grasp, or are you just kind of focused on what's ahead and you can reflect later on?
Yeah, I mean, during this part, I mean, at a time, I was just like, I just got to keep grinding through this. I mean, because it doesn't stop. A lot of people, I mean, think that this period, I mean, college over, but I mean, there's so many steps that I had to take, I mean, to better myself and make sure I'm ready for this next process. But this last month, I mean, I've just been really taking the time to myself and being around my family and friends and just enjoying every second of it and kind of being a kid for a little bit, being able to be a normal person and just relax and enjoy my friends and family.
You went to Houston, New England, and you also stayed in town and visited with Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Well, through those experiences, that's what you've done so far. There could be more on the horizon. Through those experience, what were some things that you took away of, well, that's interesting, or that's how a pro team does it, or I didn't know about that, or I'm really excited about how I handled that. What are some of those types of instances that you had through this process?
Yeah, for me, it was just kind of seeing where the team see me as. I mean, because my 4 years in college, I played damn near every position. So just seeing kind of how NFL teams, I mean, especially those specific teams, kind of how I correlate to their offense, helped me a lot. I mean, just have my perspective of kind of where I can fit in, where I see myself at the next level. So seeing them like Houston, I mean, as a running back slot, I mean, it's very similar to stuff that I did in college. And that was kind of gratifying and made me happy knowing that, I mean, some of these NFL teams still use the running back kind of like how I was used in college. So I was happy to see that. But I just enjoyed it. I mean, it's overwhelming. There's a lot of stuff thrown at you with some of the interviews and private workouts. So just seeing all the information and kind of trying to retain it and go out there and perform on the field, it's definitely a business.
And you mentioned the last time you talked to us that what you can do on the board is something that you really wanted to display. Have you been able to do that? Yeah. Has it been the type of thing where you've been able to kind of turn some heads in that regard and not just with you, what you can do on the field?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, going into the film room, I mean, I'm getting questions from running back perspective as well as wide out. So I wanted to show them I'm a student of the game, and I have learned a lot over the last 4 years, and I can be able to talk football from a wide out perspective as well as a running back perspective. So I think that I did a good job. I definitely still have a long way to go when it comes to just understanding NFL schemes and stuff. It's definitely a way different terminology, but I think I've made a good step in seeing kind of where I'm at and how I can correspond to just some of the stuff for the NFL.
Going back to the combine, the thing that always gets people excited or turned off is the random questions that you guys ask, some appropriate, some not appropriate. What were some of the weirdest experiences and kind of situations that you ran into while you were out there?
Yeah, it's funny. I was sitting next to some guys during the combine, and I heard questions from, I mean, if you could kill somebody, would you do it? And if you didn't know, if they couldn't find out, would you still do it? And I didn't get asked anything that crazy, but the weirdest question I got asked was about a mountain. They asked me, so Mount Everest is the tallest mountain, And before it was discovered, what was the tallest mountain? And I said Mount Kilimanjaro without a doubt, just with the most confidence, like I 100% knew. And he looked at me and just said, no, Mount Everest was still the tallest mountain. Just because it wasn't discovered doesn't make it the tallest. So I was kind of embarrassed, but that was the only weird question I got. But there were some crazy ones. I mean, just people asking a bunch of stuff just to see guys' reaction to it and how they respond to it. But that was the only weird question I got.
And that whole situation, I mean, you compared it to, like, speed dating. Mm-hmm. You're thrown in a room and you talk to these teams. You get 15 minutes. Yeah. And it's just the overall experience had to have been unlike anything you've ever even thought of.
Yeah, I never would have kind of guessed it was going to be like that. But, I mean, it was fun. I mean, I had a smile on my face, and I just enjoyed every second of it. Because, I mean, not many people in the world get to do stuff like that. And, I mean, going in there and just seeing guys, I mean, talking to so many different coaches after another. I mean, it was definitely a crazy moment, but I just took a deep breath and just had fun with it. I mean, I met a lot of great coaches and a lot of great scouts, and I had a good time.
I want to reflect on a few things for you now that we're at a moment now where we're kind of in that mode before you take the next big step. First, I want to remind you of the first play that you ever had at the high school level, at the varsity level. First play against Saguaro, you're playing Saguaro, mm-hmm. against Copper Canyon, the first time you touch a football at Saguaro as a sophomore, you return it for a touchdown. Yeah. Where does that play, that moment, rank in the history of DJ Foster?
It's huge. It's definitely up there. I mean, for my high school, that was the most just amazing moment. I mean, a couple weeks before that, I mean, I lost my sister and stuff, and my family was going through a lot. And I remember, I mean, 2 weeks ago, I mean, I thought I wasn't going to play football ever again. And, I mean, my friends and family kind of gave me the motivation to go out there and play. And I remember my coach said, I mean, you go back there and just go on kick return. And I was practicing a little bit. And it was my first time on varsity. And, I mean, I was nervous, and I couldn't believe it. But right when I caught the ball, I mean, it was just like the sea just parted. And, I mean, I just ran straight. And I remember talking to my mom and everything after that play and after the game. And my family was just so overwhelmed. And it was just the most symbolic moment for my family kind of at the time. And it still is. I mean, that was definitely one of my greatest memories.
Decision time for colleges, going to your senior year now. ASU, whole new staff. One of the biggest things that Todd Graham mentions is that he wants to recruit Arizona hard, and that the program kind of got away from that in the coaches before that. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the very first class, DJ Foster commits to ASU. That moment, what all went through that? It was kind of a risk for you to take out of high school, but you did it, and you've kind of spearheaded this stay true mm-hmm. notion that they've been running with for the last 4 years.
Yeah, just seeing from, I mean, a perspective, I mean, seeing guys that went before me, I seen a lot of guys go out of state and just a lot of them came back. A lot of them were unhappy, and just seeing all that, where my family was at the time, I just said, I mean, this is going to be a quick 4 years. I wouldn't want it any other way than to play in front of my family. So, I mean, I just kept my family. It's so important to me that, I mean, I just went into that, my decision, and that's what kind of was on my mind. And I knew that was the right thing for me to do at the time, was just to stay at home and play at ASU and play in front of my family. And, I mean, it was, no matter who was at the coaching staff, I knew I wanted to be a Sun Devil, and that's what made me happy about it. A lot of guys go to schools because of the uniform, stupid things like that, you know, and I was like, you know, I want to be here because of this community and this school and just because of my friends and family, and I knew no matter what, playing football-wise, that I would be happy in return.
Scoring touchdowns in Sun Devil Stadium is obviously the ultimate for you, but mm-hmm. is also, especially in the Pac-12 and other venues around the country with college football, it's a joy to be able to say you scored a touchdown at X place, whether it's the Rose Bowl, the Coliseum, or any places. Is there a play or a touchdown that stands out over your Sun Devil career to say that you did this in this venue that has this tradition in front of these fans? Is there a moment on the road when there aren't fans cheering for you that will always stand out?
For me, like you said, the Rose Bowl. I mean, that was one of the most incredible places, and not many people get to come out of their college career saying they went undefeated at the Rose Bowl, and that's something that I take a lot of pride in. And we were able to go down there twice, first time for the Pac-12 South, and we ended up playing the Pac-12 Championship. And the second time this past year, I mean, going down there, they were seventh in the country, and we came off a big loss to USC, and just being able to kind of come together as a team and trying to be a senior leader for that time. And those two memories, I mean, I'll never forget. I mean, those were unbelievable going undefeated there.
Last one for you, DJ, and we'll let you get out of here. Let's talk about some of your teammates, because you aren't the only one from your program that's competing to try to earn a draft spot. Who is the guy on your team that's looking to get selected this month that isn't on enough people's radars?
I definitely think Gary Chambers. I mean, Gary he doesn't have the film that he didn't play a lot of when it comes over the course of his time. I mean, but he has big plays. I mean, he's been a big-time player this past year. I mean, I think he's kind of was a late bloomer. I mean, just seeing the athlete he is now and just his confidence in his game, I mean, I think it's only sky's the limit for him, and I'm excited. I've been training with him this past couple months, getting ready for the pro day, and, I mean, he's just blossomed into an amazing receiver, and I think he's going to be very lucky. I think whatever team gets him is going to be very lucky, and he keeps grinding, keep working on it. I definitely think he's going to be a hell of a player.
What are you doing for draft day?
Hanging around with my family and friends, just taking it easy and just kind of enjoy the moment. Whenever I get that call, I'll be excited, and I'm just trying to keep my mind clear until then and just relax.
Well, wherever team you end up, you're going to have a lot of fans traveling bandwagon style to join you. Appreciate the time, DJ.
Thank you so
good
much.
Luck.
Appreciate
and we'll
it.
See where you end up.
Yes, sir.
Joined now by the All-American, former All-American, University of Arizona linebacker, Scooby Wright, who's going to be entering the NFL draft coming up here in about a month. It's coming up really quick. And Scooby, I promise off the top, I'm not going to ask you if you think that your mom is attractive. I'll just ask you overall how the combine was. What was your overall takeaway from having that experience?
I mean, it was an experience. I mean, every experience has to be a good one. It just depends how you look at it. But things really, I mean, it was cool. I mean, I had a good experience. I met with probably over 18 teams of GMs and stuff. I had a bunch of meetings with the teams. And, I mean, it was the grind. I mean, there's no way to simulate the combine and just, like, all the medicals and the MRIs and x-rays they put me through and stuff. But it worked out, though.
Scooby, you know, you come out of high school, you play a few years in college, but this all kind of happens really fast from when you first leave high school to the point you are now. Have you had, through this whole process, a moment where you kind of take a step back and kind of have an out-of-body experience as if to say, like, wow, this is really happening. I'm talking to these NFL players, these NFL teams, these personalities, these coaches. Is it kind of surreal to you at times, or are you just kind of putting your head down and grinding?
Actually, it's kind of funny you asked that. I mean, yesterday I got done talking with my agent, and we had a good conversation through Rosenhaus and stuff, and we were talking about where I'm projected and stuff, because he's doing his job and talking to teams and getting info for me. And he was like, yeah, you'll definitely be a day two pick, definitely somewhere in the 2 to 3 rounds. And I was like, at first, I was like, damn, okay, whatever. And then I sat down and I slept off for a minute. I was like, I'm going to be drafted in the NFL draft. I'm going to be playing football for a living. And it's kind of crazy. You know, I walked through my house and stuff because I'm back home in Northern California, and I see pictures of me playing ball when I was a little kid, and then high school and then college. And it's like, wow, it's been a journey, but I'm excited for it.
So, Scooby, you did the combine, and then you went back to U of A for Pro Day. But before Pro Day starts, I hear this story that all of a sudden you're going to stay at Cody Ippolito's house and Trevor Woods' house, and you show up at their house, and apparently Cody Ippolito was being robbed by someone who it couldn't have been you, right? It couldn't have been someone else. Someone was robbing his house on the night that you were supposed to stay there?
Yeah, so my flight gets delayed at, like, till about, like, I don't know, I was supposed to take off, like, 7 o'clock from the San Francisco airport. And I don't end up taking off till about 11 o'clock. And I don't get into Tucson probably about till 1:30, 1:45. And then Trevor Wood picks me up from the airport. And I was like, hey, let's go to your house real quick. So I went to his house and stuff. And I went to go wake up Cody. And I walk into Cody's house, walk into Cody and Trevor's house, and walk in, and I kind of kick open Cody's door because it's kind of locked a little bit. I kick it open, and then Cody's sitting up in his room. Lights are off, but he has the clicker getting ready. Has his remote getting ready to chuck it at somebody. He's like, dude, if it wasn't you, he said I would have stabbed you to death with the remote.
So basically, you made it seem like to him that his house was getting robbed in the middle of the night in Tucson.
Oh yeah, no, 100%.
That's amazing. And this was all leading up to Pro Day in the middle of the night, leading up to a basically an extra job interview.
Yeah, it was. I got there like four days before the pro day. So, yeah, I mean, it was my first night there, and I just wanted to say hi to my friends, so it was pretty cool.
Well, I'm sure Cody Ippolito has you on his hit list for something going forward, but that's some great stuff right there. I want to talk to you really quickly before we move on from the draft preparation about the combine. You know, so much was talked about how you really came out of nowhere from high school at U of A. You know, your Twitter handle, 2-star Scoob. You were the 2-star, then you came in, became an All-American. Your accolades speak for itself. And now you go to the combine, and people say that you maybe ran a slower 40 time that you were expecting. And here we are again, you know, people maybe underrating you going into the NFL draft because of little intangibles. Is it kind of put that extra chip back on your shoulder to be like, you know, here it's kind of life coming full circle on you a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, that chip never wavered or went away, but I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I'm not a underwear Olympian, so you know, I'm a football player, so it is what it is, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, what I would like to discuss with you now is when you've discussed with these teams, whether it's at the combine or at the pro days, or if you've visited teams, how do they see you at the next level? What are some of the intangibles that you bring? What kind of systems do you feel like you fit well with? And what kind of I don't know, little things that you feel like you've picked up on through this process that maybe you didn't know about yourself, but you feel like you could be successful with at the next level?
I mean, I realized that I was a smart football player, but I didn't realize how smart of a football player I really was. I mean, I knew it was something I pride myself on and stuff. But every team I've ever talked to and stuff, they're like, yeah, that was some of the best board work we've ever seen. So that's probably the biggest thing I've learned for myself and kind of took away from it, you know, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You know, your senior year, Scooby, you have to sit almost the whole season minus a few games from the sidelines. How difficult was that, first of all? And do you think an element of sitting out as much as you did and having to kind of take in the game as a spectator kind of helped you in the classroom and helped you on the boards and maybe in that regard?
Well, yeah, no, I definitely do 100%. I mean, when I was hurt, I still went to all the meetings and stuff and did all that. And some games I had a headset on, so I really got to sit down and turn out sit down. I was on the sidelines, but just to hear what was going on, and really, I was almost, me and Cody Ippolito were pretty much, we could be probably 6-7 for 10 for calling out the plays that were going to be run.
Interesting stuff. And let's talk about the last game that you played in a U of A uniform, is in the New Mexico Bowl. It was a very emotional day for you. You announced right when the game ended that you were going to be declaring for the draft. How long before that game did you know that you would be declaring? And how nice was it to be able to get out on the field and kind of wrap up your career in the way that you were able to?
I mean, I really didn't know that I was going to declare until after the game. I mean, I knew I wanted to and stuff and wanted to continue to play football at the next level. But just the way I played and stuff, and I just knew it was the right time for me and time for my family. But, yeah, that was an emotional day. I mean, I don't want to say I feel like I got robbed, but I kind of feel like I got robbed from not playing out of my last year in a Wildcat uniform. And it was just kind of it was hard. I mean, I learned a lot about myself.
Good stuff. Scooby Wright joining us here. And last one I got for you. Talking with people around the U of A program, you're not known as Scooby Wright. You're known as Scooby Wright. What is that all about?
honestly, I couldn't even tell you where that came from. It's just kind of a that's just kind of a joke that everybody had at U of A. It's kind of I honestly couldn't tell you. It's just kind of a something that just happened, and it just kind of built up to what it is.
So it's just something that just happened once and stuck, and you're not known as your normal name anymore, pretty much. Am I correct?
Yeah, and I think it was Coach Rangel who was the first one who really built it up. He was the hype man for all that.
You got to think for all these Chaparral guys, Coach Rangel, Cody Ippolito, Trevor Wood, all these Scottsdale guys. That's who you've been drawn to the last few years.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a good group over there, no doubt. Hey, Scooby, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And, man, we can't wait to see your name called. I know a lot of people out here in Arizona are very excited to see what you'll be able to do at the next level.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
It's the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ, also streaming on AZ Central Sports. Really, really good stuff from first DJ Foster and then Scooby Wright. Really a lot of fun to oversee and watch their process of going on to the next level, watching them flourish at the college level, and I'm sure they're going to be bringing a lot of bandwagon fans with them to whatever teams they end up at, because those are two truly remarkable guys, and it was I'm very appreciative that they were able to join us on the show here today. If you missed it, it's going to be on. We're going to be airing those on Fox Sports Arizona tonight as well. On Brad Sesmat's Football AZ, they'll both be joining us. We'll have the recruiting roundup with Jason Jewell as well. That's coming up a little bit later on. Let's switch gears back to baseball because it is opening week, and we talked on the first hour about overreactions around the Diamondbacks with Shelby Miller. As I'm watching right now the replay of the game on Fox Sports Arizona, just saw the three-run bomb that Shelby Miller gave up in the fourth inning. And the overreactions that came on Twitter that Eric and I saw, and also we also alluded to Zach Greinke's letdown on opening day as well. But people overreacting and going a little crazy, and it's a little unnecessary. And speaking of overreactions, so Eric, last night, you know how I feel about fantasy baseball. I am a huge nerd.
Seamhead.
Huge nerd when it comes to fantasy baseball. Like, people go nuts about fantasy football. My number one is fantasy baseball. I keep it at one team, and that's it. And I devote all my time and energy to that team.
So much so that a few weeks ago, I had to go to your house to pick up a camera and some video equipment. You were in the middle of your fantasy baseball draft, so you made your wife and daughter drag all the equipment out to the car. Barefoot.
Aren't they great?
Barefoot, I might add.
Aren't they great?
And I said, "Where's Jared?" He has a fantasy baseball draft now.
Aren't they so supportive of me and my
endeavors? It was in that exact same tone. I just sat in my car in silence and shook my head. But continue with your story.
Thanks for getting that out there. I'm not ashamed. They're great people. So anyways, one of the guys on my fantasy team that I drafted, maybe around the time you showed up at my house, is by the name of Alex Colome, who is right now slated to be the closer at Tampa Bay. And he was in last night pitching against the defending AL East champ Blue Jays. He's trying to get through this game with a one-run lead, and the bases are loaded.
So, yeah, so basically what I'm going to play for you,
yes,
is,
thank you,
is a little snippet of Blue Jays manager John Gibbons, and he sort of explained the Chase Utley rule, as they now call
it?
Yeah,
which happened in the playoffs last year,
okay,
where Chase Utley reached out, and people listening can't see it, he reached his hand out and hit a guy
going into second, on a force play.
On a force play, kind of throwing off the chance to turn two, and they call it interference. And that was a big point of emphasis this offseason, is cracking down on that, not allowing those interference plays to happen.
Player safety,
because when he did it, he could have. I can't remember who he was going up against.
He took out someone. I can't remember either.
But it was a severe safety concern. So last night, there is a ground ball. Here's the play. A ground ball to third. The player for the Rays at third throws it to Logan Forsyth at second.
Ruben Tejada was the player. Broke Ruben Tejada's leg in the slide.
I am all screwed up with this.
No. Chase Utley.
Oh,
Ruben Tejada.
Slid into Ruben Tejada. Jose Bautista, Joey Bats, goes sliding into second base, totally clean, and hits Logan Forsythe's leg at second base. He reaches his arm out to hit him. Now, he doesn't completely trip him up and threaten his safety, but there is a clear arm reaching out to hit the guy. Sure enough, Forsythe's throw to first to turn two to end the game and avoid a run being scored goes into the dirt past the first baseman. Two-run score for the Blue Jays, and they take the lead in the ninth inning and could win it in the bottom of the ninth. Instead, the Rays challenge the play. The umpires see that Joey Bats reached his arm out and hit the leg of Forsythe, and they call the runner out at second, and if there's interference, the runner who hit the ball at first is also called out. So it goes from a one-run deficit to a one-run lead to it being game over. I get a win for my fantasy team from Alex Colome, and then incredibly poignant and maybe unnecessary comments from John Gibbons, the manager of the Blue Jays, after the game.
Were you arguing that that Bautista stayed towards the bag. So it looked like he didn't.
Yeah, he went right course. Over the bag. He went. He got down in front, came off the bag. I don't know exactly how they ruled it up there or who made that decision. You know, maybe momentum took him a little bit that way. But come on, you know, that's going to go down in history. It's probably the first one to end a game. And hopefully they'll look at that a little bit better.
Fine line, John, between trying to prevent injury and that. I mean, there was no way he was going to hurt him on that.
No, that's, you know what? I guess we'll come out and wear dresses tomorrow. Maybe that'd be maybe that's what everybody's looking for. Yeah.
Did he say anything about
that? That's all I know. That's all I got. That's it. I'm done talking about it.
Come out wearing dresses. So that's the line right there that has some people a little upset after all that. And they have every right to be upset at the end of that play because you heard the reporter Eric asked the question. He clearly wasn't going to hurt Forsyth on that play, but he does. It's almost like the NFL and what's a catch. You can't have rules in place.
The Calvin Johnson rule.
Exactly. If you have a rule in place, you have to go about that rule, whether it's totally clear as day or kind of along the lines. But if you don't call it, then people will be up in arms.
It's like leading with the shoulder on a hit in football.
Exactly.
It's such a gray area. I mean, like, they'll throw the flag and they'll be like, yep, that was targeting. And then they'll show the replay. And no, it wasn't targeting, but these things happen so fast. In fairness to the umpires and the officials in football, the refs, I mean, these things, it's easy for us to sit on our couch and watch it in 9 different angles in slow motion and say, oh, yeah, that's definitely interference.
Yeah, but they had the opportunity, though, because they challenged the play.
That's true.
And if you blatantly see his arm go out, okay? I'm not saying that this is the right or wrong call. I'm being totally objective here. His arm is clearly out. His arm clearly grabs the foot of Logan Forsyth. I don't know if that caused Forsyth's throw to be bad or if his throw was going to be bad no matter what because it was a huge freaking play. If he doesn't get that out or run scores, then it's a blown save. And we're going to the bottom of the 9th. And the ball goes past, maybe they lose. But if you don't make that call after it's been challenged, what happens next time when something else like that happens? Where someone blatantly puts their arm out or their leg out or their body out to get in the way and interfere, you go back to that play and say, well, Bautista did that, and it caused the ball to go by, and now we're looking at this argument from a completely different angle. The part that's causing a stir right now is this, maybe we'll go on and wear dresses tomorrow on the field from John Gibbons. I'm paraphrasing that quote. That wasn't his exact quote, but that's basically what he said. He came back today. They're playing right now. They're playing a nice little turnaround. Not even 10 hours later, they're back out on the field because it's a getaway day. And he said before the game that he didn't mean to offend anybody, but that his mom, his wife, and his daughter weren't offended by his comments. And he went on the whole bandwagon of how people are too sensitive. And all we always hear about these days are people are too sensitive. People are too sensitive. And if you're going to make a comment that could offend people, whether it's them being sensitive or not, maybe you just shouldn't say it.
And he was also the second manager within a 24-hour span to say things that probably were taken a little out of context, maybe shouldn't have been said.
But were also very unnecessary.
Of course. I mean, the whole Chip Hale instance, and then yesterday the word gets out that he wasn't aware that Zach Greinke had the flu, so now there's this whole conspiracy theory of was he sick, was he not sick? Did someone inside the Diamondbacks organization maybe toss that out to Ken Rosenthal to sort of like calm the waters mm-hmm. a bit? But it's good. I mean, baseball kind of needs a little controversy. It's good.
Yeah, and not to mention with Bryce Harper and his Make Baseball Fun Again hats.
Of course.
Did you see that?
I did.
I think I think what he's doing is smart because even though it's going to ruffle some feathers and make some people angry, he's building a brand for himself.
And he is he could be a great face for not just he is the face of the Nationals, but for all of baseball. Young, talented, outspoken, energetic. Like, yeah. Baseball needs, they need to attract more.
And they need personalities.
They do. They need to attract more people who are like-minded like Bryce Harper.
Let me give you an extreme example of what Bryce Harper is kind of doing here. Okay, remember Miley Cyrus? Remember when she was Hannah Montana and this wholesome little young up-and-coming star, and then out of nowhere she shows up wearing practically nothing on stage,
yep.
like with her tongue out and doing all this crazy stuff, and people are all up in arms? Well, guess what? Whatever she did and why ever she did it, it was brilliant.
It was.
Because now she's one of the most well-known figures. She is selling a crazy amount of albums, clothes, endorsements, posters. Sure, it's nuts. So you can't hate on Miley Cyrus for building a brand and sticking to it and it being extremely successful because she's in the public eye.
And she flipped the switch so quickly. I mean, the transformation wasn't gradual. It's, you know what? This is going to be my new image. I'm going to throw it out there. It's probably going to create some controversy.
But either way,
in the long run,
it's
absolutely the best thing.
And she is rich now.
Well,
she was, to begin with.
Yeah, she's been rich her whole life.
Wow, it's really amazing what she did. I'm not saying Bryce Harper is pulling a Miley Cyrus here.
It's great that we're mixing in Miley Cyrus on the show, by the way. I mean, this thing is
improves the program.
Oh,
right?
It's just taking on a life of itself.
Hey, if I bring up Miley Cyrus, maybe we'll get more unique visitors. So that's my goal here at the end of the day. But with Bryce Harper, he's not at that level of Miley Cyrus. But what he is doing is he's going outside of what is given to him from a baseball standpoint and the exposure standpoint, and taking it further, getting more unique eyes on him, stirring the pot a little bit, and getting out there in a way that where any attention is good attention. And he's building his own brand at the end of the day. So I have nothing wrong with what Bryce Harper's doing. I think to a degree, I agree with what he is doing. I think that the young stars in baseball are incredibly underserved, especially the way you see football and basketball players marketed these days. Baseball has some incredible young talent, and I was at the Suns game for Kobe's final game. I guarantee you 90% of the people there didn't know Mike Trout was sitting courtside. He is one of the first people I noticed, but no one knew that he was sitting courtside. That is one of the biggest stars in sports right now, because baseball's underserved, and Bryce Harper knows that. He's going above and beyond to make sure that he creates his brand, and I have nothing wrong with that. Great show, Eric. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Tune in tonight, Fox Sports Arizona. Have a great Wednesday.